up. It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Align Money Show coming your way featuring Greg King. Greg is Senior Vice President and Wealth Advisor with Johnson Financial Group. He is responsible for growing quality client relationships by providing sound financial guidance to high net worth individuals and families. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie. We moved on to talking about today's retirement landscape and how it's really changed a great deal in a pretty short amount of time, and all the different challenges that go along with that, all the different opportunities that go along with that, what you need to be considering if you inherit an IRA, some kind of a qualified account, all the different planning considerations along with that. We had a great conversation about asset allocation and asset location and the important things to be thinking about and considering. Close with a great difference-making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Greg, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
All right. Well, thanks, George, for having me, first and foremost. So my two truths and a lie is, one, I know a Russian lullaby. Two, my second cousin played for the Canadian national soccer team. And three, I can do a kickflip on a skateboard.
Whoa. Nice. Are you saying that you still can, or you at one point could?
I might give it away, but let's go with I still can.
Good enough. All right. So you know a Russian lullaby. Your second cousin played for the Canadian national team, soccer team, and you can do a kickflip on a skateboard. Wow. Excellent. I don't doubt the Russian lullaby, because why would I? I don't think that your second cousin played on the Canadian team.
Actually, he did, so I'm glad I spent you on this. And this is one of those where I know a Romanian lullaby, not a Russian lullaby.
Unbelievable.
My grandma's Romanian, and so is my grandpa. So, like, if my mom's 100, I'm 50, and she would always, it's quite silly, but, you know, rub my back and sing this little lullaby, like the cat goes around the mouse and eventually finds that. But yeah, my second cousin did play a goalie for a Canadian soccer team. He ended up on the national team. I don't know how good that national team, but it is a fun little stat, you know, when a relative makes it to the pros.
Totally.
And I did grow up skateboarding, you know, whatever those years were, fifth grade through ninth. And if I jumped on a board like you jump on skis, you know, I still feel like give me 10 tries, I'll be able to do the kickflip. That was my favorite trick.
Okay. I like it. Well done. Grandma and her Romanian lullabies, your second cousin. And we don't need to make fun of Canadian stuff. It's amazing that he accomplished that incredible feat. So, and great job on the kickflips.
Yeah.
Greg. All right. Well done. Well, what's top of mind for you right now?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the retirement landscape of today. And I think that's looked different when you look back like 20 years at a time. It's really interesting because you look at the generation that's, let's say, in their 70s and 80s right now, they've been well taking Social Security and a pension. They typically worked at one place for 35 years, you know, down at the local plant, and made a life and lots of children and retired generally young, but have since just collected this paycheck, but may not have as much liquid net worth, right? You're not typically seeing like $1 million IRA for that generation. And then when you skip forward a little bit, those, let's say 60s and 70s, you're starting to see that maybe a mix where you have $1 million IRA next to a $40,000 pension. And then those kind of eking really close right now, 50s and 60s, really don't have a pension. I mean, you could be a government worker, a teacher in Illinois and some other states, but that I think is interesting.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it's a pretty short amount of time that we've made that extremely dramatic shift.
Yeah, someone thought about the 401k, you know, program, and more companies implemented that. The match is great. You get more flexibility. You get more control. And I don't know the exact math, but you could say if you had a $2 million 401k next to a $50,000 a year pension, like what is that exact math? But I think they're very comparable. It's just a very different way to approach it. You're not getting this check every 2 weeks. You're kind of calling your advisor, your broker, or you're placing a trade at Fidelity and saying like, I need $5,000. And so the management there, I think, is where folks are needing more and more help. I think the other thing to think about is you're changing jobs a little bit more, right? You might work somewhere for 10 years, then another place for 10, and then the last place for 15 before you retire. You could have that three different, 401ks out there. One could be a pension, two are 401k.
We human beings really crave certainty. And so the pension, theoretically speaking, it gave you that certainty, but then the trade-off was there's no flexibility. I don't have any liquidity. And a lot of those people don't have any at all, like you said. And now all of a sudden the shift is there's very little certainty and I need to do it all. I need to understand how much I need to be saving and what I need to be investing in. And then how do I turn it into income? Because all this stuff is not obvious. And I don't know that it's even obvious to me. And I work in the business.
Yeah, you're almost like on a highway on cruise control right now. You just haven't gotten off yet at your destination. You know, you're still, you know, you got a long road ahead of you, and you know the GPS says some ETA that you're aware of. Someone in their 80s. I really have seen like every type of client, and that's what I really like about this job is like I get that experience to then relate to the client. Okay, here's what a typical client in your situation should do. Here's some things that I would do right away. Here's some things that are going to come up in the next 5 years. So when we're talking about retirement, I find it very interesting. Everybody likes Roth. We should do a Roth, this Roth thing. And we could talk about Roths for a little bit because more times than not, your earning years, you're in a higher tax bracket than you are when you finally flip that retirement switch. Mm-hmm. Really, you look at, you know, two equal earners making $150,000 a year, and then you eventually stop. And maybe you've saved up quite a bit in non-retirement buckets. When you retire, usually you're touching that non-retirement bucket first, then you're eventually touching retirement bucket. But what I love to do in planning is show them a tax chart, year by year taxes paid. This is huge, where every year you get that inflationary increase in your income. And so you see the taxes paid every year slowly goes up. So does your property tax, of course, and all those things. But and then again, right when you flip that retirement switch, you're living on dividends and interest, possibly that pension, but it's nowhere near their higher income year. So I'll run into cases where I'm recommending to do a pre-tax deferral for that 401k, then Roth, and clients will be like, that's, and I'll show them that same thing. And what's nice about our planning tools is we can toggle that on and show them those effects. And then what's interesting in back to that in retirement low income year, I'm sometimes recommending to force some of that money out of the IRA, because what does eventually happen is you turn 75 or 73 for some, and that's that golden RMD age, that required minimum distribution. So that's forced income. And if you let that IRA linger and never take money out of it, you're forced to take 4% roughly out of that number. So if we're talking about a $2 million IRA, that's $80,000 a year in forced income. And so you might jump back up in bracket. And again, our tools model all this out. So we really try our best here at Johnson Financial Group to provide the tax planning piece the most.
And I think we have a tendency to sort of forget that, yeah, it's great to have a great savings rate and a great rate of return, but we need to be mindful of the holes in the bucket, or however, whatever metaphor you want to use. And that's what taxes are. That's money that is not ours. So we better do some tax planning. And I don't think enough people are doing that.
No, it's your biggest expense, is what I always say. That quite literally is your largest expense. Once the house is paid off, and you really look at an itemized sheet of what you're spending money on, it's typically your tax rate of 20% of every dollar that comes out of those accounts.
Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, it's been Roth, Roth, Roth. But to your point, it might not be. We need to actually do some planning. And that's one example where technology is we're using it for good instead of evil. It's actually helping us to make those decisions. And as much as maybe I would like to not have to worry about that kind of stuff, if we're not, we're leaving money on the table or writing too big of a check to the government.
Exactly. You could be self-employed, for example, and still think like, okay, I could do a Roth version of my 401k. And again, I'm just trying to beat the system with a Roth. But in actuality, when you go back to that tax rate of what you're really paying money on, you could be in the 30% tax bracket. It's a no-brainer to get that pre-tax. And just the opposite, I'll have even folks that, let's say in their early 40s, and they're making good money, but they're probably going to make more. I like to be bullish on everybody's situation. Like, hey, you're going to be CEO one day. It could also be that opportunity to do the opposite of maybe we should do Roth and max these things out on the Roth side. And then as we step up a tax bracket or two and it gets to a certain level, back to my planning tool, kind of putting in some of these projections where it's going to make more sense to do pre-tax. So it's not a bad thing to like toggle back and forth and all those.
Well, it's just knowing, right? That's I think that there's so much value going back. It's overwhelming. It can be confusing. And without being able to compare apples to apples, then we're just kind of guessing like, oh, maybe I should do a Roth or maybe a pre-tax is better. Well, let's just let the computer, you know, sort of model it out, and then we can make a good, educated, informed decision.
Yeah.
And that's all I want to do, Greg. I want to feel like I'm making good decisions about things because I don't know what's going to happen. And so we put ourselves in the best possible position and we meet consistently and we have these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like seeing a doctor. You should be going once a year just in case. You might want to go check for, you know, I just went to the dermatologist to check, you know, random like moles on my back. My wife's like, hey, you should get that looked at. And when I went in there, they're like, how old are you? You know, we don't typically see that, but I think that's even better. And they said the same. They found, you know, random, you know, fun fact, there's actually blue moles that are deeper in the skin and there's this whole thing. But yeah, I like to use that same analogy. It's like a full body Mayo Clinic type of scan. And the younger you are, you don't need as much attention on your body. The older you are, you definitely do. You want to check your eyes, ears, nose. You want to do more severe tests for different types of things as you get older. And that's the same in financial planning, where we just want to get you on the right track at the beginning. And I'm sure lots of people will tell you early and often and, you know, just get that deferral rate going. But it does hit a sweet spot in those like early 40s, mid 40s, where people are starting to say, okay, I have college coming up for the kids. I'd like to retire early at 55. Like, what does this even look like? And that's my favorite part, is just taking about an hour and a half and itemizing out income, assets, and expenses. Those are the big three: income, assets, and expenses. Because you can influence your income to a degree, not always, but you can certainly work a second job. You could certainly go for a promotion, or you might say, I love my job, but I'm probably only going to get a 2% increase. You can certainly influence your expenses. Don't go out to eat. Maybe go on one less vacation, and all those things will have effects on your plan. And then your assets, right? Of what do I invest in? How do I invest in it? How aggressive? And so we try to just at least put in, what are you doing right now? And then what do we do? Or what are the effects if we change this a little bit, or maybe you go more aggressive, or you spent a little less, or you deferred more to your 401k. That's an expense. This is the real effect of that. Now you can retire 2 years sooner, or you might have to work 2 years longer based on our analysis.
I'm sure that people just appreciate knowing that because they're probably thinking about it. So why not just address it and know one way or another?
Yeah, they tend to leave much happier. That rule of 72, you know, it's going to double every X amount of years. I just like to use the simple 7% return. You're going to double your money every 10 years. So if they're 40 years old, 50, 60, and they start to realize that number is a lot bigger than they think, even in their early 40s when they might say, I started late and, you know, there's obviously all these expenses, but they're setting themselves up now. They see that number later. They're like, oh, holy cow. And Social Security is going to bring in that much? Holy cow.
I'm rich.
But they're off. Well, and here's another thing is, I think this is another thing that's different for retirees is the potential inheritances coming down those generations. You know, you might have that grandma, grandpa on pension still, and possibly a mortgage, or the home's paid off, but like that's the only asset coming down to, let's say, mom and dad. And it could be a substantial home. It could be a really small home, but that's an asset that is coming down that's going to help your retirement in a way. And then when you think about the generation below that, I mean, my God, there's going to be, I think, a tremendous amount of wealth coming down. Back to that, there's no more pensions. You could pass away with $1 million IRA still in your 80s. And now your 62-year-old son and daughter are inheriting an IRA. And not sure if you've discussed those rules, but the 10-year rule on an inherited IRA is quite the nasty income tax. Back to those income, you know, what are your income brackets and pre-tax, post-tax, and what should you do? I recently ran into a case where two daughters inherited $1.7 million each in an IRA. 1.7.
Amazing.
That is pre-tax, though, and they have 10 years to draw it. So I'll just give you the case study is I just did a 7% return on those dollars for 10 years. The draw was $230,000 a year. That's pre-tax and then a net of tax. Let's just call it a number. They receive about 170 grand a year. Well, this was also a teacher. She was allowed to do a 403B and a 457 deferral. She wasn't doing that before. I recommended to do those things. So she was able to defer $31,000 in a 403B, $31,000 in a 457. That kind of nets this income coming in. They're like, hey, could we slow down? Could I, you know, now they can do a lot more with their retirement. And so I really do believe that's what's coming down over the next 5-10 years is you'll start to see people retire and also inherit money. And it's like this, it's a good problem to have, unfortunate passing away, but super interesting from a planning standpoint of how to navigate a 10-year income stream that you don't really need. You don't want to plan for your mom and dad to die and provide that type of money to you. And you have the house, right? The house could be worth now with with the housing market boom. Some of these homes are going, who knows, 600,000 in areas that they were 200,000, you know, 7 years ago. And so that's getting split up. And now we're thinking about, well, should we give this to the kids, the grandkids, that is? And now let's set them up.
So many different, you said it correctly. These are good problems. And when somebody passes away with a qualified account like an IRA, there are so many different rules and so many different ways to screw that up. And you just touched on one that you need to be withdrawing the money within 10 years. I'm sure there's a million other rules too, but what's important is that you become aware and you educate yourself and you make good decisions. Otherwise, I'm sure the tax consequences and penalties are probably extreme.
Correct. Now they've recently enforced you have to take a minimum draw based on your age. If you inherit one of these in your 50s, it might be like 2% of that amount that you inherit. That's the minimum you have to draw. And interestingly, back to that 62-year-old that might get this type of asset, if they're retiring at 65, a lot of the time we're recommending just take the minimum for 3 years after age 65 or the year you turn. A year after, we're going to do, you know, 4 or 5 bigger years in draw because of your income now, later. And there's a lot of creative planning that goes into the best way to take the asset, for sure.
It is difficult to do financial planning when there are no assets. And when you have lots of assets, it's almost a requirement. So much stuff to worry about, Greg. So much stuff to worry about.
I'll try to make it easy with anyone that I work with. Now, and you can tell I like an educative approach. It's like, no matter who I'm talking to, this is the way I like to talk is, why is this a rule? You know, the government likes to enforce tax policies. Like, let's force some income out. The old rule was, it was based on your age. If you inherit at 52, it was like 2%, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, until you start to get in your 70s, then it was a lot more. Well, now people were passing away with an IRA and an inherited IRA. And they were like, okay, let's at least force this out. People have saved up their whole lives to take this money. It's kind of time to take it, you know.
Now is the time. And I can just see it. You're in a client meeting, Greg, and your client's really stressed out. So you stand up and you walk behind them and you start patting their back and singing your Romanian lullaby and everything's okay. I love it. Maybe don't do that. Maybe do it. I don't know. You know your clients a lot better than I do.
Kick off every meeting, finish every meeting.
Yeah. It's something to consider. So, well, Greg, we're ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
Well, I think a huge difference-making tip is understanding. We talked a lot about the income draws and, you know, how to draw. But what do you invest in each one of these buckets, I think, is equally as important. When we're looking at not only how do we hit your goals and, okay, you want to buy a car, put that in CDs, money market, cash. But when you're looking at long stretch retirement buckets and you have the different, you know, inherited IRA, IRA, Roth IRA, brokerage account, what you put in those buckets is just as important. Meaning you could have bonds in your IRA that's sheltering the income versus bonds in a brokerage that's hitting your income. You might have municipal bonds in your brokerage. That way it's not being taxed at income rates. You want growth assets in your Roth. Now, holistically, you're still a moderate investor. You're just asset locating these things in the appropriate buckets. That, I think, is massive. We love to manage money that way. Look at the buckets and then silo some things out like Roth. We do like a full growth approach, all equity. It's just the last thing you're going to touch. Mathematically, you should. And then it becomes that conversation between your traditional and brokerage that you're tending to see more bonds in your traditional IRA. You're like, well, isn't my IRA meant for like long-term retirement growth? This is near retirement. And in retirement, you tend to want to put your bonds in that IRA. Then you want to put things like stock and blue chip and dividend-based things in your brokerage account. So that, I think, would be my difference making tip.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on. It's not just asset allocation, it's asset location. And again, so much stuff to think about. So, Greg, I appreciate you coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Well, the quick thing is Google Greg King, JFG. You'll see my bright, shining face. I'll have a video bio out soon with, I got some photos of me playing hockey, golf, not the Romanian, sitting on a couch thing. But
No kickflips?
No kickflip videos. But you can reach out to me there, contact me. I work with, again, variety of clients. These could be high income earners, low liquid assets to those that are generationally planning. We try to take that approach of just, we know you're going to be high net worth or are high net worth at some point. And I do take that fiduciary approach and just making sure we're giving all the best recommendations, the planning, the insights, and then we'll meet with you ongoing from there.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Greg your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Throw Greg King, JFG, Johnson Financial Group, into your favorite search engine, and it will pop up. And I'll certainly link all of them in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.